The thing that is in room 101 is the worst thing in the world.
Two kids on the block.
Sonia, I don't like Sonia.
Jason Donovan, feeble, sorry to be predictable. Eric Jameson, the birdie song. Connie Minogue, that guy Terry off the word.
Ruby Wax.
Mr. Bean, Yellow Beetle.
This week in Room 101, we are joined all at once by 50% of the Oblivion Boys, 33 1/3% of his own family, and 100% of actor and comedian Stephen Frost, who will be attempting to persuade me, Nick Hancock, that his least favourite people, places and pop songs are unworthy enough for a place in Room 101, BBC Radio's compulsory retirement home for the terminally poor. I will then say yay or nay to his carefully considered choices on a purely biorhythmic basis. Stephen, it's lovely to see you.
Hello, Nick.
Right, we're going to play in your first piece. Let's get straight on in there, because we've got very little time.
That's right. Let's move on there.
Let's play your first choice. Talk us through it.
Well, I took my headphones off, so I didn't have to listen to it, but it comes through the speakers as well, doesn't it? It still sends shivers up my spine. I mean, it's a rubbish piece of music, for start.
And it's called?
It's called Popcorn.
By?
By, Kiora.
Good answer. Hot Butter.
Hot Butter.
Now, there's the name of a band who know they're only ever going to release one single.
Hot Butter. When did it come out?
July 1972.
72.
In the charts for 16 weeks.
Good God. No, what happened was I was doing TIE, Theatre in Education, in Westcliff-upon-Sea, Southend. It was the music we had. You know, they play music when the children come into the assembly before us poor actors would have to act out in front of them. And I think I was in a gorilla suit or something. I had to hide behind the flats while the kids were coming in. And this is at 8:30, 8:45 in the morning. And, you know, their children, they're used to getting up at that time. We're actors and we'd been out drinking the night before. And you'd be in this costume behind the screen, sweating, hungover, all the kids coming in screaming, and that music would be playing. And you hear that for, you know, every day for 6 weeks. And so, therefore, I hate it for that reason.
Yeah.
But also because it's a rubbish record.
Obviously, I don't think you'd have to hear it for 6 weeks. I think 6 seconds.
Well, I got it, and it really does give me the shivers.
Yeah. It's absolutely terrible, and also it sounds a little bit like it's been done on that thing that Rolf Harris used to do.
Yeah, the stylophone.
The stylophone, yeah. And can we get another burst of it, do you think? Just to remind people quite how awful it was.
That is actually somebody doing it on my mouth, isn't it? Do you reckon?
Yeah. Well, let's have a go. Yeah, definitely, I think. Definitely. Now, I've been trying to think, when I was listening to it earlier, when I heard it before, now, is it not also the music when the little clock goes round when you're waiting for the school program to start? That's what it... That reminds me of school, too. Well done, we both hate it. But sadly, it doesn't get in, of course, because it was released in 1972, and that was a great year, of course, because that was the last major honour that Stoke City won.
That's right.
March the 4th, 1972, the Football League Cup final. So, I'm sorry, it doesn't go in.
And they were playing, who were they playing?
Chelsea.
Chelsea, right.
2-1. Okay then, right, some more music. Another of your choices.
Go placidly amid the noise and haste. And remember what peace there may be in silence. As far as possible without surrender, be on good terms with all persons. Speak your truth quietly and clearly, and listen to others, even the dull and ignorant. They too have been.
That was Desiderata, by the way, by Les Crane. I like that. Listen to others, even the dull and ignorant.
That's
an advert for the DLT breakfast show. So, Desiderata.
Yeah, Desiderata. When I first heard that, I thought it was a joke. I thought it was someone doing some just talking absolute rubbish. But it was real, and it was very big when I was around 16, and it used to be pinned on bedroom walls as teenagers. I remember my girlfriend had it on her wall. I thought, you know, this is, like I say, a lot of 16-year-old kids were sort of living their lives by that creed.
Mm.
I thought it's the duty of all 16-year-olds to be, you know, anarchists and rebels and change and things like that, not go placidly.
It's got some great things. Avoid loud and aggressive persons.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
They are vexations to the spirit.
Well, that's right. That's what I said to my girlfriend. She had it pinned on her bedroom wall, and I I underlined that bit there because I'm sort of a loud person and I thought she liked me.
I tell you what you were, mate. You were a vexation to the spirit. That's what you were.
I could not go placidly through this world.
No.
I am not a child of the universe.
But it's palpably untrue, some of it, because it says here, if you compare yourself with others, you may become vain and bitter, but always there will be greater and lesser persons than yourself.
That's right.
Unless you're Graham Taylor, of course, there aren't
people
than yourself.
Yeah, then which you'll just be satisfied.
And Les never really had a follow-up single, did he, to Death and Right?
He did Gay Alsatians in Bondage, which was a rap number, but it never went anywhere else.
No, but unfortunately it came out in 1972, so it doesn't get into Room 101.
Oh, no, it's in 72. Almost up from 72 so far.
Well, it isn't, but this time it isn't just because of Stoke winning the League Cup. And it's because Mary Peters, of course, won her wonderful fantastic
gold medal. Yeah. I remember watching you do that, Mary. I was most chuffed.
Well done, Mary. So if Mary Peters is listening, she could write in and let us know, or indeed if anybody's willing to forge a letter from Mary Peters, that would do. So there you go, you failed again, not doing well so far.
But two good nominees, I thought.
They were so close, but, you know, that isn't good enough.
I thought those were the ones.
Most hated town or place? Stephen.
Yeah. Now, it's very unfair to slag off a place or region, right, because, you know, there are nice people there, good people there, bad people everywhere, aren't there?
Is this a disclaimer?
No. It's just that I was in Ireland recently, touring, doing an improvisation show, and we had a great time. We went to Dublin, Galway and Cork. And I've been to Dublin and Galway before, but I've never been to Cork. And several people warned me, especially some Irishmen who were from Dublin, that they're a bit cynical in Cork. And I just laughed off. I said, it's another town in Ireland, and it's a beautiful looking place on the river there, but the audience were very tough. We do improvisation, you know, that stuff where you get suggestions from the audience, and then you act out a little comedy scene, and everybody laughs, and that's it, you move on.
Yeah.
They didn't believe it. They didn't believe...
I should point out at this stage that I kept myself shaving this morning, and now I've just got blood pouring all over it.
Blood oozing out of his top lip.
There's going to be an evacuation of the basement of broadcasting.
Now, you see, if you're in Cork, they say, oh, no, that's a trick, that's fake blood. And the whole audience, the whole night long, would not believe we were improvising. After the show, we went to the bar in the theatre. The whole audience came into the bar and told us again.
How many of them were there?
There was about 300 of them. They came in and said, you rehearsed that. The one man said it was the worst rehearsed comedy show he's ever seen. It was under-rehearsed. I said, no, of course it was under-rehearsed because it was improvised. We made it up there and then. I said, if you didn't like the show, that's fair enough. But they went on and on and on. And they really put us in a bad mood. I mean, if you don't like the show or any show you do, that's fair enough, you know, personal preference. But they thought we were ripping them off. So it's not a very nasty thing about Cork, but the audience there just did not believe it.
It's not a particularly altruistic choice, is it? I mean, it's purely a personal and subjective choice.
Yeah.
And this is the BBC. We are here to educate, entertain and inform, and it's for the whole of the country.
And bleed.
And bleed, especially today. No, so I'm afraid it doesn't get in.
No, that's fair enough, I can understand that.
Well, you shouldn't be so pleased. I mean, fight a bit harder to get in, for goodness sake.
Well, I hope to go back to Cork.
Okay, never mind. So three down and none in.
I can't believe it.
Very, 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 very cool.
2-0 off at least.
More music.
Who put salt in the sugar bowl? Who put fireworks in the coal? Who put a real life toad in the hole? My brother. Who put jam in mother's shoe? Who made me a caterpillar? Who locked granddad in the loo? My brother.
But surely his brother gets away with all these things by just saying to his mum, I'm sorry I did it, but Terry Scott's my brother.
Yes. I mean,
that's a good enough excuse for doing anything, isn't it?
Well, I was a kid when I used to listen to that. I used to think, well, that's just Terry Scott messing about, you know. Wasn't convinced by it at all. And I've got five brothers and, you know, it wasn't true to life.
You mean you weren't convinced that it was a child doing it?
No, that's right.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it was the man from Terry and June pretending to be a little boy.
Yeah, and it was the idea that this 30-year-old bloke's brother, who was probably the same sort of age as him, was going around making caterpillar stew. So it was actually quite a tragic story, really.
Yeah.
And also, apparently, his brother was Scott of the Antarctic.
He did something useful, you see. Well, you know why he went to the Antarctic?
Terry! Terry drove into a life of polar exploration. It's truly right. And one thing that his brother didn't do was kill him, which was something I think we'd all like him to have known. And obviously, my brother gets in. And does Terry have a reaction to his inclusion?
There you go, he does it.
Very good. Okay, and that's in. So
great.
We have to open the door, shove it into room 101, and see if we can hear what's in there with it.
Pinto, where you gonna go, the old Pinto, Pinto, what you gonna do, the old Pinto, Pinto,
does your mommy know?
Does your mommy know?
That was Bimbo by Susie Miller. So, yeah. My Brother by Terry Scott goes in and
good.
Sits happily alongside Bimbo. So, most hated television programme.
Well, it Stephen. Goes back, doesn't it? If I remember rightly, it goes back to Terry Scott again, and that's Terry and June, isn't it?
Mm.
The sad thing about this is that June Whitfield, who's in that with Terry, I just feel sorry for her because I think she's very good and I like her and she's done stuff before and she's fine. But once you've got it in for somebody who doesn't make you laugh, you keep thinking, why is he on television? Why is he doing? Why don't they get somebody else in? Why don't they get Stinging or somebody you know, to do it? Because
Stinging June.
Stinging June, yeah.
Excellent new sitcom idea. Sir Dennis is coming for dinner. I'm sorry, I have to go and save the rainforest. Yeah. No, stay till Sir Dennis has finished his coffee.
Yeah. Well, I can't stay, I gotta go. That's my Stinging impersonation.
Very good. Let's have a little bit more of that.
Sir, oh, as you say, walking on Terry's stomach. There you go. Yeah, but it was
very good, but under rehearsed.
But thank you. You're from Cork. the thing about sitcoms, I mean, sitcoms are a dodgy area, and I tend not to like them. But apart from the classic like Step to Son and Fools and Horses and stuff like that, you know, the good stuff.
Full House.
But there are a lot of bad ones churned out. And for me, Terry and Scott epitomised that. The middle class house on in suburbia, the vicar coming in, and all that sort of stuff, which is absolutely not funny, basically.
Well, it's always the same plot, wasn't it? Basically, Terry invites Sir Dennis for dinner without telling June, who's temporarily lost the use of both of her arms. And then the vicar arrives, and Terry mistakes him for an escaped burglar.
That's right. Yeah.
And that's the end.
Yeah.
And I always like in the radio television and the newspapers when they have a little description of the plot, and it's Terry borrows his neighbour's lawnmower and has some explaining to do. Or Terry buys a goldfish with predictably hilarious consequences. It's a terrible, terrible show, but doesn't get in.
Because
June Whitfield's in it. And I
agree. That's fair enough.
We have to have sympathy for June Whitfield for putting up with him all these years. Yeah. And for Reginald Marsh, who I think is very good. Sir Dennis.
Sir Dennis, yeah.
Yeah. What was the surname in that? Marshbanks, was it?
No idea.
I
didn't really listen that much.
Well, if you're Mary Peters and you're listening, please write in and let us know Terry and June's surname. Okay, more music.
Number nine. Number nine.
I'd love to see them do that live because they could go, and now we've got a little number for you.
Yeah, the Beatles, Revolution Number 9 from the White Album. White Album's a good album, some good songs. But that one, I thought, no, listen to it. You know, they're doing something different. But no, I think it was crap. I mean, the original, there's the Revolution, which is a good rock and roll. You say, you know,
Revolution, well,
you know. Good rock and roll number, great. John Lennon's voice, great. But that Revolution Number 9, biggest load of pretentious rubbish.
See, the thing is, there were talented musicians, and we just then tried to cover Revolution, we fell very badly, but I reckon we could cover Revolution.
Number nine. Like that. Yeah, it does go like that later.
Can you do Sting doing number nine?
Number nine!
No, you do Sting, I'll be Terry Scott.
Number nine!
Excellent, well done.
It is, I mean, it's not, I mean, yeah, I don't mind people, bands doing different things or experimental or trying to be, but that was just a waste of space on the album, wasn't it?
Well, I wasn't going to let it in because I thought it was going to be, there's going to be a revolution, because that shows how little I know.
Mm.
But that's enough reason for me not to put it in because I made a mistake. So bad luck. Okay, most hated film.
Right, it's Zulu with Stanley Baxter.
Well, I think it's going to be music.
Baker.
Stanley Baker.
And he played all the Zulus, Stanley Baker. He's very good.
Put a bit of music for you, promise.
Fire!
Don't fire, do you see the whites of their eyes,
lads? They're running with their eyes shut.
I think think if I was ever in a war, I'd be disappointed if there wasn't any music. I've never seen fighting without music like that.
Brilliant. The film is a problem for me because it's the only film I've got taped on a VIP. I don't use video much, and it's the only one I've got. And when I was a kid, when it came out, it was my favourite film. You know, it was all shooting and, you know, adventure and stuff like that, and Against the Odds. My favourite film, and it's so stirring and all that, you know, three Englishmen beating the whole of the South African tribesmen, you know, they can do it on their own with their penknife and...
Three Welshmen.
Yeah. Well,
all the officers were
English, exactly. And Michael Caine, who became famous in that film, doing a posh accent, which he was crap at, and he never did another film like that again. And I loved that film, but as I got older, I realised it was a bit, you know, the exploitation of it and the rallying call of the, you know, the British army against the foreigner, basically. This was a bit out of order, Michael would say. But it's a shame, because I love all this, I can quote all the lines from it and everything like that. Why us, Sarge? Because we're here, lad. Because we're here. I mean, it nearly brings tears to my eyes when I see it.
Yeah.
And then another 300 Zulus come over and they shoot them all and stab them and set cattle on them and then, you know.
In the little CD in here, it says, "It is enough to say that during the siege of that isolated mission station, 11 VCs were awarded to the defenders. Mm. And if the same medal could be given outside British ranks, an equal number would have been won by the attacking army." Oh, yes! Oh, bound to happen!
Yeah.
Gladstone. And we've also decided to award some VCs to the attacking Zulu forces.
Except we can't find anywhere to pin the medals on.
Ah, thank you. Yeah, absolutely ludicrous idea.
So I love that film, but I learned to hate it, if you know what I mean.
That isn't enough, you see. It has to be 100% hate.
Right.
And also the idea of Michael Caine actually being a fairly posh man in the army. Yeah. Very funny idea.
Yeah.
So it doesn't get in, I'm afraid. Bad luck. Not many got in so far, Stephen. Yeah. Unlucky. Okay, most hated book.
Most hated book is, as far as I am concerned, yes...
He couldn't remember. I'm sorry. They'll probably edit out that little gaffing.
I had two others in my head. I had another one, which I thought, I can't remember which one I said now.
Tell us what the other one was first.
Bleak House, because I had to do it for A-level, which I failed.
Bleak Book, it should be called.
And I read the first page, and I always remember the first page, brilliant, but I never got past the first page.
Mm.
So I failed my A-level.
Do you like Dickens?
I don't know.
I've never been to one. You have to do these old jokes.
Have you tried Kipling?
I don't know. I've never kippled. I've heard that one.
Yeah.
And I think these bad jokes probably lead us in.
To the Oxford Book of Comic Verse. Because I've had loads of these over the years. People buy them for me when I was a kid, because I was telling jokes and acting and all that sort of stuff. I can understand, because there's never anything funny in them. There's one or two funny ones by Ogden Nash. The American poet, who things like, ones I remember, one called The Baby, it goes, "The baby, a bit of talcum is always welcome." And that's funny. And it's short, sweet, you know. But then they have, like, poetry by Tennyson and Byron, and they call it comic verse, and there's not one joke. You know,
it's like not Shakespeare's comedies.
Yeah, exactly.
Not funny.
Not one laugh, not one gag, you know.
Yeah.
You'd rather, Terry Scott could get in easier than all those people. And, you know, they're not even amusing or humorous.
Yeah.
They're just, like, not serious. Therefore, they call them comic.
Even Edward Lear, the Pobble Who Had No Toes had once as many as we.
Yeah. Well, I heard that read recently live, and I've actually read that to my daughter as a, you know, bedtime story stuff, and I couldn't really get with it, and she's sort of vaguely amused by it, and then I heard it read live by a professional actress, and it was dire, that one was.
Well, I think it's the idea that allowing a company that compiles reference books to do a comedy book really is a very, very bad idea.
Yeah.
I mean, Freddie Parrotface Davis never tried to publish a dictionary of phrase and fable, did he?
He should have done.
You've got to stick to your area of expertise, that's what I say. Yeah. So it gets in.
Let's open up
Room 101.
Well, they bung their ideas up.
And chuck the Oxford Book of Comic Verse deep into the vaults.
There's never a dull moment aboard a Turkish steamer.
Oh, no.
I'm shocked.
Johnny Morrison, his travels on the radio.
Absolutely.
I was hooked. I mean, Animal Magic and all the rest of it, and... I love those ones where he used to go abroad with his mate and talk, you know, his mate, "Oh, no, you can't do that." All that stuff, very good.
I agree, but it's in there, apparently. If there are any complaints about the show, blame the producer, Mr. Evans. Okay, some more music I believe we have now.
Spring was never waiting for us, girl. It ran one step ahead as we followed in the dance. Pages and repressed in love, but fevered iron like a
Hotel. Okay, and it was, of course, MacArthur Park by...
Richard Harris.
Richard Harris.
The actor. And I remember watching...
A Man Called Horse.
Yeah, I remember watching him on film and TV and thinking, yeah, he's good, I like him. Then this, I heard again, I heard this on the radio. I was at home and I thought, again, I thought it was a joke. Because when it gets to the bit, I thought, well, this is a rubbish, soppy song. And then it got to the chorus and then I knew it was a joke. Because someone left the cake out in the rain and I don't think that I can take it because it took so long to bake it. And then I'm on the floor laughing and then comes and I'll never have the recipe again.
That's right.
And I'm thinking, well, that's funny. That's better than My Brother and Desiderata and all that. It's funny, someone's singing a song about a cake in the rain. Melting, you know. And
how does it melt in the rain? I don't quite
know. Well, it all depends on the acid rain, obviously. Sting would make it for a good version of acid. Someone left the cake out! But it's just... And it's a very long record, and it builds up musically towards the end, and it goes on and on and on. And Richard Harris isn't one of the greatest singers, and I thought it was a joke. And then, of course, it was serious, and it got in the charts as well.
Richard Harris, MacArthur Park, number four for 12 weeks.
That's well, it's good, good stuff then, isn't it?
1968.
Yeah.
Reissued, got to number 38 for 6 weeks in 1972.
Isn't that strange?
Oh, wow. Hey, weird. Very good. Obviously, it goes in, open the door, send it in. That was a Deseret, you know. You can't have that. What is our producer? That was Police. That was a brilliant series. Frankie Abbott, they were all in there. Did you like that one?
I did like that one, yeah. John Alderton, at his best.
Oh, I think we're going in the wrong room here. This is room 102 we're throwing these things in. Yeah, me, that's terrible. Okay, your most hated object.
Coffee tables is the thing, because... I don't know why they're called coffee tables, because, you know, you can put more than just coffee on them, obviously. And they're low. And I'm not keen on low furniture. I'm 6'5", and I like a deep, proper chair to sit in. I can't stand those sofas you sit in, and your knees are higher than your ears, and all that sort of stuff, and you can't get out and all that. And coffee tables, I always, always crack my shin on them. They're always around, you know, in the middle of the chairs, and so you go to sit down, and you crack your shin on them, you know, cut yourself and all that sort of stuff. And they've usually got magazines on, glossy fashion magazines, which I'm not too keen on either.
What, not even a low?
Not even a low.
You're joking.
I don't read a low in Innovations or whatever. It's interiors, Home and Garden, all those stuff, you know, £5.50 for a load of glossy photographs of someone's back garden with wisteria and all that stuff. But the coffee tables are too low. I like a table to be high. My table...
I've
got a kitchen table. It's a long table to eat food off, right? And,
I know what a kitchen
right,
table
no, no,
is.
Right, okay, well, you never know. And, I've had these blocks of wood with holes drilled in so that it can raise it. So it comes up to your chest. So when you eat, you haven't got very far, you know, to
get
the food.
And you don't spill as much.
No, you don't spill as much, and your knees can get underneath. It's beautiful. High furniture. Coffee table and low furniture, burn them. All of them. Cupboards and you know when you like cupboards where you keep your saucepans and stuff. I haven't got any cupboards like that because what do you want to bend down for to fix it? Get it up there, eye level. That's because I'm talking
by the Simon Park Orchestra.
Yeah,
yeah, good. Okay, I think well I've got you down for a no here.
But
I was
going to
say no, but you have convinced me, and that's what this program's all about. Very
good,
really.
Open debate.
Yeah, well done. Coffee tables in. Let's open that door. Shove it in. You know that?
Wasn't Ed the Duck, was it?
Virtually. It was Disco Duck by Rick Dees and his cast of idiots. Now that's more like it. I mean, that should be in room 101. More music now. Written by Andrew Lloyd Webber, sung by Elaine Page.
Says it. Do I have to say any more?
I'd like you to. That would probably run in a quarter of an time.
A quarter of a ball, that would stand up, but, yeah, and it'd be a death penalty, wouldn't it?
They'd just play that and get guilty.
Guilty, next. Yeah, there's quite a few reasons here. That was a musical based on T.S. Eliot's book of cats and practical cats and all that sort of stuff, right? I mean, that song, I just don't like it. But we, when we were at drama school, we had, this is another like the Oxford Book of Comic Verse. We were told, buy that book, you couldn't afford it, buy it. And we had to buy it. And we had to choose one of the poems from it and then do it for voice lessons and a bit of acting and stuff like that. And we were told it was funny.
Yeah.
Again. It was just about cats. I can't stand cats anyway. I mean, they just crap on my garden. In my garden, I haven't got a cat and all the rest of them. My daughter's allergic to them, so I don't like them. I want them out of the place. And we were told it was funny, and we're reading these things, and they're not funny. It was me and Mark Arden, you know, my partner, the Living Boys, and a mate of mine, Jerry Gittins. We just, so we decided, I did Mr. Mistopheles, the magical cat or something like that. I did like Tommy Cooper. And you ought to see Mr. Mistopheles, the amazing blow of a cat like that. And I thought, funny, the rest of the class, like the bloody voice teacher, you know, not impressed.
Yeah.
Mark did his, he did the Mr. McCavity, the mystery cat.
He's a mystery cat, he's called the hidden paw.
That's as far as he got, because he did it, he came out from behind this dustbin we got in the lesson. He's called, he had a Mac on like a detective. He did it in a French, like a Clouseau. McCavity's a mystery cat, he's called the hidden paw. And he brought his hand over like that, slap, like to emphasise paw, because he was using his magic.
Yeah, like that.
It got a big laugh, including him, and he got the giggles, he never got through the rest of the poem.
That's
all I thought it was funny. Again, big letdown. And setting it to music, big mistake. Dancing to it in leotards of multicolour, big mistake. Getting Elaine Page to... Oh, what's her name? Did it originally? Dej did it. She twisted her ankle. And she never twisted her ankle. She knew. Come out of it. Oh, I'm sorry, Andrew. I can't run through...
I haven't done my homework today.
I have to get something else to sing. Pretend to be a cat singing. Very popular. Lots of money. But that's not the criteria we should judge things by, is it? Surely. Popularity and money-making powers.
No, but it doesn't get in, and I'll tell you why. Because any piece of music that's been covered by my hero doesn't get in, and we have a cover version for you here.
Who's that? Your granddad?
That's Klaus Wunderlich, and his amazing Hammond organ, obviously. So therefore...
You translated that, yeah?
That was yours. Obviously, already in.
Fair enough.
In the very first show, I think, by Paul Merton.
Oh, yes, I remember hearing that one. I heard it. But you see, hearing it played like that, that's how it should be played. That's the standard and style and the way it should be done, not seriously as a semi-operatic thing.
Yes. Well, I think you've done very well, because you have got into Room 101, or into Room 102, if our producer's got it wrong, Coffee Tables, My Brother, by Terry Scott, MacArthur Park, by Richard Harris, and the Oxford Book of Comic Verse.
Good.
Well done. So, Room 101 was presented by me, Nick Hancock, and starred guest Stephen Frost. The producer was Lissa Evans.